assaults and robberies. Both are rising now that organized gangs are operating in New York City, and police say there could be hundreds of criminals out there and they have no way of stopping them all.
They walked across the border for a better life, but now they are walking out in handcuffs after police say their American dream was to commit crime.
Police say a gang terrorized New Yorkers, robbing them and then hacking their phones to drain bank accounts of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Surveillance video shows the moment two masked men broke into the back of a Bronx bodega, walked up to the register, and made off with $100,000 cash.
I think all the crime is getting worse right now. Especially with the bikes and the mopeds and the scooters, everyone's riding around.
Police say this is one part of one migrant gang, and there are others.
According to the police commissioner, the city is in the middle of a crime wave. And it's gang-related. Now, although some of the gangs are made up apparently of asylum seekers, what nobody's talking about is there's other high-profile gang-related activity being orchestrated by gangs of New Yorkers as well. We're talking everything from cell phone theft to pickpocketing. A crime spree involving bodegas has seen certain businesses lifted for over $100,000. And the next time you're out at a bar and someone attractive approaches you and talks to you, they could be targeting you for some crimes that are so heinous, it makes me think it's probably not even safe to go out at night here. On top of that, some of the asylum seekers who've been caught up in this may have been exploited by gang leaders the police are now looking for. But before we get into why this is happening and how much damage is being done to the city, it's important to understand that many of the criminals who have been caught have already been controversially released without bail, so they're still out there somewhere for some reason. But what's alarming is that when last year ended, overall levels of crime in the city were down. There was a 12% decrease in extremely violent types of crime, but the reduced crime trend has reversed. And what most people don't know is that since 2019, overall crime in the city is up 32%. Which means one out of every three New Yorkers are now more likely to be involved in some sort of incident. And the types of incidents happening now are unlike anything I've ever seen. So this right here might look like your typical New York City apartment building, but inside buildings just like this, there are gangs operating and using them as hideouts. Inside, you'll find illegal apartments full of the tools needed to commit modern crime. Stuff for hacking, stealing identity, reprogramming phones. And authorities think there could be hundreds of these gang operations hidden throughout the city that they haven't even discovered yet. But the mayor has made it clear that the gang activity we're talking about does not represent the majority of asylum seekers, many of whom have come here seeking a better life without the intent to commit crime.
How did these migrants end up on the wrong side of the law? Police say it did not happen overnight and that they are organized criminals. Police say a ringleader of the group has been recruiting migrants who recently arrived in the city to do his dirty work. He even had a so-called inside man.
What a crazy operation. There's all these people involved, there's a ringleader, and apparently he was able to lure asylum seekers into his operation. And what's crazy is they even had their own IT person inside the apartment helping them break into all the stolen phones. And the police raid was pretty intense. They showed up pre-dawn, tons of people, body armor, equipment. There were a lot of guys, and they went into that place when everybody was asleep and arrested them.
Police say a gang terrorized New Yorkers. Here, a thief on a moped steals a purse, but most importantly, a phone. The phone is then hacked to drain the person's bank accounts. This one pattern has nearly 150 victims.
So apparently, these folks were part of a moped-related crime spree. That's how they would get the valuables in the phones. They'd ride up on one of these illegal mopeds that the police have since confiscated, and there would be two riders. There's the driver, and then there's the snatcher, and the snatcher would grab whatever they were trying to steal, and the driver would worry about driving away. It's very scary, and especially a lot of these are electric, and if they're electric, they're not gonna make any noise when they approach you on the street. So if you have AirPods or some sort of headphone in, you're not gonna have any indication that they're coming until it's too late. Apparently, one person was seriously injured when their purse was grabbed, and the riders attempted to flee the scene while they were still hanging on. And the scariest thing about all this is if somebody steals your purse or your wallet or even your phone, that's your whole life. You got your bank account in there, you got all this stuff that in the name of convenience is on one device, but if people take that one device, everything's here. It's really sad. But it wasn't the ringleader who was out riding around on one of these mopeds.
Believe it or not, that he has his own IT guy in there, apparently, breaking into the phones.
Police arriving to this apartment building where the suspects allegedly rent rooms inside an apartment. Once police hit the apartment door, they say the...
So it seems like the leader of this whole operation ended up recruiting people who otherwise would have been living in the city's shelters. That's terrible. But before we continue uncovering what these guys were up to and how many of their counterparts are still out there, in a sense, the leader of this thing was looking for people to exploit. Over 170,000 asylum seekers have come to New York City, and he was able to find vulnerable individuals in that population. Doesn't mean they're innocent, but it does mean he was offering them something very enticing. But one of the problems with this is police and the government here don't have a whole lot of warning of who these folks might be in advance of them committing a crime.
They're essentially ghost criminals. No criminal history, no photos, no cell phone, no social media. Sometimes we're even unclear on a name or a date of birth.
So apparently with local criminals, police can learn a lot about them based on where they might have grown up, what their online activity is like, where they went to school. Most Americans are already in the system to an extent, but somebody who just got here and has limited paperwork to begin with, maybe they're not. And since New York is a sanctuary city, they don't cooperate with the federal government, which, as we'll soon find out, could be limiting the amount of information the police have to make these arrests and find out who the bad guys are in the first place. But shockingly, a number of suspects who were arrested are also released without bail. And the reason police are searching for the ringleader is because he was arrested previously on a grand larceny charge, but also released without bail. And he wasn't apprehended in this police raid, and he's still out there on the loose. It's great that we're catching the bad guys, but if we just then turn around and release him and they go back to doing what they were doing, the city's not exactly any safer, and critics say this soft-on-crime approach is why local gangs of New Yorkers are doing stuff that might be even worse. So here we have your typical New York City bodega, deli, convenience store, whatever you want to call it. It might not look fancy, might not look like much. Perhaps you think they're just in here selling sandwiches, making pineapple juice. But to criminals, a place like this could be more valuable to hit up than an actual bank.
Surveillance video shows the moment two masked men broke into the back of a Bronx bodega, walked up to the register, and made off with $100,000 cash. One of the men wearing a hooded...
That's insane. $100,000. Now, experts are saying that it was probably a week's worth of sales from the entire store. But the criminals made away with all that money in cash without getting caught. And apparently, if the criminals were to have tried to rob a bank, their chances of a successful robbery would have been 60%. And typical damages from a modern bank robbery are around $10,000. So this was 10 times more than they would have got from a bank. There was probably a safe or something that they were able to break into, and it sounds like it was full and hadn't been emptied in quite some time. And as you'll see from the footage, the robbers definitely knew what they were doing.
One of the men wearing a hooded jacket can be seen rummaging through compartments until he finds the money, stuffs it in a backpack, and leaves.
A lot of the times they get away with $5,000, $10,000. That's not a story.
So as you can see from the hoods and the masks, this gang of criminals, they were professionals and they had inside knowledge. We think they knew that money was in there and they knew how to get in.
So there's the little deli on the corner, but you can tell the storefront goes back here. And what do we have? Over here, we've got a couple of windows.
Now, these look pretty secure, but it seems that there was a back door entrance, which is common in buildings like this. And that's what they were able to breach and enter the business. This particular deli doesn't have one, but there's another one down the street that does, right around the corner from the main.
This one, it looks like they walled it all off, probably for security reasons.
And as you can see from the footage, they deliberately decided not to go in the building's front door. They went in the back to attract as little suspicion as possible, and it doesn't seem like any alarm or anything went off, because if it had, they probably would have been moving a little bit quicker.
According to the NYPD, it happens sometime between 11 p.m. on Sunday and 5 a.m. on Monday at Los Castillos Mini Market on University Avenue. Owner Carlos Castillo was away on vacation. When he got back, he found that the place had been ransacked.
And how did they know the owner hadn't yet gone to the bank? Maybe one of the workers tipped him off that the owner wasn't around, which means this heist could have been an inside job, or maybe a delivery worker. They get deliveries of beverages and food and supplies. Maybe they delivered a lot and they knew what was going on, knew the owner was going to be out of town. Either way, it was definitely not a random smash and grab type attack. A lot of thought went into what was going to happen and when it was going to happen. On top of that, the back entrance that they went to, it was way less obvious than this little place. In fact, it wasn't visible at all from the street.
They must have known what they needed to do in order to get in here.
The thieves went around the corner, down the stairs, through a back alley, and pried open this metal door with a 6-foot crowbar to gain entry.
Now, I've been in basements in a building interior before, and when you go down in there, it's not like there's just one door.
There's a whole bunch of doors. Some could lead to apartments, some could lead to the businesses, some could lead to the basement, but they only broke in to the one door they needed to access to get inside the deli. They didn't go into the wrong door. They knew where to go. But there's no ultimate confirmation as to who these people were, who these people weren't. My guess?
With the amount of insider knowledge these guys had that allowed them to commit their crime in the first place,
we're probably talking about local criminals here. But the next gang the police caught wasn't targeting local bodegas. No, no, they were targeting the rich.
High-end bars in Lower Manhattan, targeted by a criminal crew setting its sights on people who are drunk.
Yeah, police say that crew would lure in men, then clean them out, then spend six figures on luxury products.
So, as you can imagine, there are a lot of bars and restaurants all over Manhattan.
Around 10,000 of them in total.
And since there's a lot of wealthy people who go to these places, if you're a criminal, each bar is a potential location for you to spot a victim.
And when someone's at a bar or restaurant and they're trying to have a good time, their guard is down. And what you've got here is your classic honeypot scheme.
You're at one of these places and an attractive stranger approaches to you. They seem interested, and they are interested, but not for the reasons you might think.
They have been removing cell phones and credit cards. Once they get the victim's property, high-end stores, as well as Apple, where they have been running up charges upwards of $100,000 to $200,000 per incident.
Okay, that's insane. $200,000 in multiple incidents? That's double the bodega heist. Except this time, the customer was targeted at a lounge like this for being rich.
The New York Times refers to these people as the Grinch Boys, and apparently what they were doing,
after robbing somebody, there's a 24-hour Apple store right here in the city, and they would go there with their credit cards and buy a whole bunch of stuff and then sell that stuff later.
They were robbing people at 2 a.m. and buying iPhones at 3 a.m.
And there was a terrible amount of sophistication that went into this operation, including how they selected who they thought was rich.
Prosecutors say Pomales was a ringleader. He allegedly directed women to chat up men and gain their trust before robbing them.
I was intoxicated, also very tired. I'm pretty sure that's why I was targeted by those two women.
So it sounds like the way the gang operated was they would have their female operatives already inside the bar when victims started showing up.
Which to the unsuspecting victims would not seem out of the ordinary at all.
It probably looked like the after work crowd or girls' night out or just an average evening in the city. Nothing suspicious about this. And after striking up a casual conversation, they could figure out what this person does for a living, how much they make, where they live, who they're hanging out with. They know everything about you.
To the victims, they're buying drinks, chatting up attractive singles, but the crooks are waiting until they get drunk and then they're gonna rob them.
And what's frightening about this is there are so many ways that could happen. It could be as simple as lifting someone's credit card when they're not paying attention, doing the same thing to their phone when they're not paying attention, or leaving with them and going to another location.
And then either having one of your thug friends rob them when they're out on the street walking,
or wait till they bring you to their apartment and then rob them when you're there.
Detectives say once they marked a target, women would get them to leave a bar, go somewhere else, take their belongings, and spend as much money before the victim realized what happened.
At the time, I left the bar and was trying to get back to my new apartment. They were able to get my wallet, and they had my phone.
Now, what's crazy about this type of scheme is it's probably way more common than just this one story. I mean, think about it. We're all essentially a walking bank.
But there's something about this particular crime that made the gang easy to find.
According to the New York Times, the criminals were active on social media,
where they would brag about how much money they were stolen and how rich they were.
But that brings up the issue of New York City's sanctuary status. And how are the police supposed to find criminals if they have no way of identifying them or using the internet to track them down?
The answers to these questions are not reassuring.
In crime has some wondering if bills signed into law under Mayor de Blasio that prevent the NYPD from cooperating with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement should be reconsidered.
Huh, so it sounds like some of the laws on the books in New York City that are not necessarily recent, they're why the police are having a really tough time with some of the gang activity and the normal tough amount of time with some of the other gang activity.
The ex-mayor in question here, Bill de Blasio, is a former progressive two-term mayor of New York.
And look, I'm all for separation of powers, but the question that a lot of people have is, how is New York City supposed to use information the federal government may have about violent criminals who could be in the city if they're not allowed to talk to the government?
The laws in question removed ICE agents from certain police-related activities and from certain city correctional facilities. And it limited the NYPD's cooperation with ICE
only to situations that were putting the general public in immediate danger.
Since there's no longer any cooperation with immigration, if the NYPD apprehends somebody who's wanted by federal authorities,
whereas before these laws were passed, they may have held that person and then turned them over to ICE, now that does not happen. There's no cooperation. They just release them and it's up to ICE to track them down.
Now, yes, New York City is a sanctuary city, and these laws were designed to prevent unnecessary or unfair deportations in the eyes of officials at the time.
But because of the rising crime, people are now talking about rolling some of these back so that the police can have more information to keep the city safe.
These sanctuary city policies are ridiculous. They're impeding our law enforcement, our officials. They're making those same law enforcement officials less safe, and by consequence, they're making all of us less safe.
So the issue here is that when somebody enters the country, the federal government checks them out, processes them.
But then when they come to New York and make a shelter request, part of that process starts all over again.
And that's why controversial policies like the idea of creating ID cards for people who've entered the country, those don't sit well with everybody, but they would give the NYPD more information because, hey, you could have to present this ID.
Now, I'm not advocating for that system, but a lot of times the NYPD's going in blind when they encounter somebody, which is why it might be a good idea to start cooperating with the federal government.
But according to the New York Post, not only are many of these suspects free without bail, they're referring to these criminals as ghost perpetrators who swap identities with other criminals
and have multiple aliases they can use anytime. Which means not only are New York City's lax court laws making it easy for people to get away with no consequences, once they're back out on the street, they could claim to be anybody and go on as they were.
And on top of that, some of the criminals caught in the nightclub extortion schemes, they're back out on the streets too, and they're local New Yorkers.
Which makes it seem like criminals are taking advantage of New York's laws.
Laws that were designed to make sure that people, no matter who they are or where they're from, are not unfairly treated by our justice system and incorrectly prosecuted. But should those be rolled back? Do we have too many of them to begin with? How would you fix the asylum crisis here? Let me know. Thanks for watching. I'll see you in the next video.